Welcome to the Sad Fam Club, baby. You are enough.
Oh, hey. Welcome to Sadcast, a podcast featuring stories, art, and design from No Fun City. I'm your host, Becca Clarkson.
Holy smokes. It's episode 90?
Woo. Big shout out to the founder and former host of Sadcast, Pamela Rooney. What a privilege to carry on her legacy and to have a platform to have conversations and connect with people who would otherwise be perfect strangers. To be honest, I wasn't convinced the podcast was going to get to episode 90, but then I got an email from a local actor about a new show that sounded super exciting, and weeks later, he ended up gifting me some very valuable lessons.
If you're not learning new things, then really, why don't you just get out of the way?
If you recognize that voice, it's because he's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, my name's Joel D. Mongrain, he, him. I'm fine with being called JD. I like being called JD. I'm a member of Peter Ballantyne Cree Nation, and I run a little podcast called Actors and Ancestors, as well as I'm an actor, and I'm on HBO's True Detective and Netflix's Avatar The Last Airbender, among a whole bunch of other things that I've done in the past.
Wait a second. Isn't SADMEG all about featuring emerging local artists? Okay, sure. The creatives we spotlight don't generally have experience working alongside Jodie Foster, but JD reached out to us in hopes we'd highlight his unique and necessary new project. I'm curious, largely from a selfish point, why did you want Sadcast to feature this podcast? You know, we don't have a huge following either. We're sort of a little local publication in Vancouver.
Yeah, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Are you kidding? I mean, you guys are always uplifting artists, talking about really cool out there things. And I have no qualms with audience size or anything like that. I mean, if you guys don't think you're big, I think you're big to certain people. And that's what we are. Yeah. What I'm trying to do, you know, I'm trying to inspire small groups. And there's never too small of a person out there that's willing to help you uplift. So if you're willing to help uplift me, then I'm very grateful. I'm happy to be here.
I was really interested because your podcast in this very saturated podcasting world seems to be offering something that we don't usually see. And so I was hoping you could tell me a bit about how this went from an idea to a reality.
Yeah, it's a passion project of mine. I mean, I was not the biggest podcasty person. My partner created an amazing podcast for Amnesty International, and she's got a background in doing stuff like that. And so I was just getting more and more curious, and I had listened to a few things, but I said, okay, well, since the podcast world has everything you can imagine, I really want to hear about other Indigenous actors and their journey and how they got to where they are. And sadly, it didn't exist. I mean, I looked all over the place, and you know, there's all these one-offs of really great actors out there, like Wes Studi and Tantu Cardinal and the Elders and up and coming new ones, but nothing in a dedicated platform. And I was, you know, just kind of having to search for this and that 5 minute snippets here and there. And I think it's really tragic because over the years, there's just been so many exposés on Pretendians. And they get a lot of attention, and there's so many incredible Indigenous artists out there, not just in acting, but, you know, I figured I'd just kind of stay in my lane. And I had a very specific person that I wanted to do the show for, and that was a younger version of me, because I wish I had been inspired to chase it at an earlier age. And so my hope is that by highlighting other Indigenous actors, and you're going to hear all different paths. There's no wrong way to do it. There's no right way to do it. That maybe it'll, you know, get some people a little less afraid to take that chance and to get out there. And maybe one day I'll actually be interviewing them. And then I think that would be a full circle. I'd be so incredibly happy doing something like that, thinking that maybe I actually made a bit of a difference, you know?
Why did audio feel like the right medium to make these connections and tell these stories and set this example? Why, yes, that is my dog whining in the background. My professional recording studio happens to also be the studio that I live in with two pets. If you'd like to learn more about Jeannie, my dog, please pick up issue 35 of Sad Magazine themed Blank Slate. Jeannie is the cover star. Okay, back to JD.
Audio is, it's so easily accessible, right? I mean, we can do it anywhere. You're at the gym, you're going for a walk, you're driving in your car. And I think as a result of that, people really dial in a lot more. They pay attention in a different way than when you're, you know, watching the visual medium, the spectacular of what's going on, explosions on TV and things. And it can be a lot more intimate in a different way. People kind of lose themselves. I enjoy now, like I'm listening to other things and I just enjoy being taken away and having a laugh, and they're like, oh, right, I got to pay attention where I'm walking here. You know, and it's a really cool, it's a really cool feeling that to have that connection with just another person's voice.
I really agree with you about just the unique relationship that people can have when they're listening to someone on a podcast, because they just immediately feel like your friend in a way that I think doesn't necessarily happen with TV. Like, there is that fourth wall there. Are there artists or are there podcasts or shows or other figures who have kind of informed how you're running this podcast or the format of it?
I came in pretty green, I would say. And I thought, well, you know what? Why try and do anything outside of what I would like to experience? I want to create a positive environment. I just want to get to know somebody in a very quick snippet. You know, it's not going to be too much, but I just want to pretend that we're just, you know, two native people sitting in a living room and getting to know each other, having some laughs. Some of them I already know, some of them I don't. But I think there are certain elements within native culture that just kind of carry through, and we're not trying to hold hands with anybody as a result of too. That was something else I was finding was lacking. In a lot of other interviews, if people would have to explain certain things, like, oh, can you, you know, tell us just about that? Oh, why are you introducing your family, where they're from, and you know, why is this happening? You know, and even talking about issues within the Native community, we know it. We already know it. We don't have to go into great detail and talk about residential schools again for the thousandth time, explain what they are, right, and dig all of that up. We can do it in one word, right? Oh yeah, my grandma went to that school, and this all needs to be said. We know what goes on there. Our history, if I can get a little serious for a moment, our history for a while, when people were listening to our stories, started to become really rooted in a lot of trauma and pain, and that's the art that people were taking in. And there, so then we were just this pity case almost for a lot of people watching Indigenous people. They were like, oh yeah, those poor guys, oh I feel bad, yeah, we're terrible. And now it's starting to shift, because again, we're all becoming more powerful, our voices are becoming louder, and we're actually able to carry through. A lot of humor now is actually being portrayed and shown. It's wonderful to see, because we're a funny, resilient, strong people nobody laughs more than just a bunch of natives around, and we had to be. I mean, come on, we survived. Yes, there's a lot of trauma that we've gone through, but I think it's nice that we as artists, we can look at our past. And I've always said, you know, you can let your past give you a temper, or you can let it temper you and make you stronger. And I think that's what we as artists are doing. And with shows like Res Dogs and other stuff coming out on CBC, my friend Anna Lam is doing that show. I mean, I'm excited about the future.
JD and I are speaking at a historic moment for Indigenous actors on the big screen. Lily Gladstone, who played the character Molly in Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon, was just nominated for an Oscar for Best Actress. She's the first Native American woman to be nominated for the award, and the second Indigenous woman. The first was Yalitza Aparicio, who was nominated for the 2018 film Roma. But Gladstone is the first Indigenous person to win a Golden Globe for Best Actress in a Motion Picture. That happened earlier this month.
Thank you all so much.
In her speech, she dedicated the award to, quote,
every little res kid, every little urban kid, every little native kid out there who has a dream, who is seeing themselves represented and our stories told by ourselves in our own words.
And as JD has mentioned, he created actors and ancestors with a younger version of himself in mind.
One of my first Indigenous heroes was actually a cartoon character called Brave Star. It wasn't even real. But as a kid, this was a cartoon in the 80s, and he was one of the first Indigenous people that I had seen that was the main hero. You know, he wasn't a sidekick, and there was a couple of lazy tropes thrown in for sure. It was an 80s cartoon designed to sell toys. But at that time, I was like, oh, wow, you know, because I grew up and there was all these John Wayne movies and things like that. And we were always just kind of a joke. And I grew up with my family, and I love my family, my Cree family. I'm a Mixie kid. My dad's white, and I didn't grow up with him. I met him when I was about 12. And so watching TV and all these TV shows and movies, and I was like, oh, we're bad guys. But we can't be bad guys. I love my family. I don't understand. And I didn't even know any of the names of a lot of the actors that were in the industry at the time, really trying. I mean, celebrity for that matter, it's always been viewed through a colonial lens. Any Indigenous actor that was quote unquote famous really wasn't famous in the broader scene. They would be even famous actors, you know, they'd be like, oh, that person, right? They were in Dances with Wolves with Kevin Costner, and they were that, the chief, whatever their name was. Oh, yeah. You know, things are changing now, and that fills me with hope. People are taking notice. They're demanding authenticity, which is amazing. And they're connecting with our people and realizing that, you know, we're not all the same, and embracing those differences too. So that's another thing that I hope to highlight, just showing like how different our nations are, Indigenous peoples. You know, for a long time, it was just like one thing. I really want to put the spotlight on all of these new artists that are up and coming, older artists that have broken down the doors, maybe make some kids out there feel they're okay. They're good. Because again, me being me, I wanted to show that being a Mixie kid, that's fine. You're still Native. You're still still who you are. And again, going back to my show, that's the dream, just to sit and talk to somebody that was like, hey, I listened to your interview with so-and-so, and man, they came from somewhere that I was from, and that gave me the courage to get out and try, and I'd be so happy.
It's my life. I can cry if I want to, cry if I want to, cry if I want to. It's my art. I can rage if I want to, rage if I want to, cry.
This next clip you're about to hear is from episode 3 of Actors and Ancestors. It's called Fighting is My Medicine with Kaylee Reese. Kaylee is Afro-Indigenous and discusses her experience being mixed with JD. The pair actually cover a wide range of topics, from their experience working with an intimacy coach on the set of True Detective Season 4, to Kaylee's achievements as the first Indigenous woman to win the title of World Boxing Champion, and what being two-spirited means to her. You can hear a lot of care between these two and a lot of respect for each other's differing journeys. I hope you enjoy listening as much as I did.
It brings me such joy to have you here. Can I ask you to tell me your name, about your land, and where your people are from?
Absolutely. Tabutni so much, JD. Kisuk everyone and Tasawis Mikuninog Nutamas Hikonke Wapanaak Nutamas Cape Verde Island Natai Providence Rhode Island. Hello, greetings everyone. My given name is Many Feathers, Many Talents, and I am from the Hikonke Wapanaak tribal nation based in Massachusetts. I currently live in Philadelphia, but I am originally from Providence, Rhode Island.
You know, right now it is Indigenous Peoples Month. Great month, favorite month of the year. Part of this is getting people to understand though the issues surrounding things like the missing and murdered Indigenous women's movement. And you're very active on this on your social media and everything. What would you want someone who doesn't know too much about this to know? And more importantly, what would you like people to actually step up and do?
It's one of those things that Native people, Indian country, Indigenous, however you want to identify it, we know what goes on in our communities. We talk amongst ourselves, but that's the problem. And the problem comes from, you know, we can get into jurisdiction and law enforcement and the lack of funds or lack of law enforcement on reservations, but it happens on and off reservations. And basically, it's not just women. It's not just young women. It's young women. It's older women. It's boys. It's older boys. And it's something that's been happening to Indigenous peoples everywhere. It's just being targeted. And especially when you have these different reserves or these reservations and this secluded sovereign nation area where they only have 25 cops for a reservation the size of Rhode Island, like Navajo Nation does. There's no policing, there's no backup. And then you get to the jurisdiction issue where if it's on tribal land, it's tribal police problems, and we don't get the support of local or federal police. And it's just something that does not get talked about. Like, I know every Indigenous person that you speak to knows somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody that went missing. And it's it's ridiculous how easy it is to just find all these victims. And then you get to the point where, you know, Native families don't want to identify their loved ones as Native for fear of them not being found or looked for. A lot of these times, these women and these girls and these people are reported missing, and you just get the response from law enforcement, oh, she probably ran away. She's probably out drunk somewhere. Yeah, that's the case, but that's where they're the most vulnerable. And then they turn up in just a body. I mean, it's something that happens. It's ridiculous how much attention doesn't get put on this. And it's a movement where just have the conversations. I know awareness leads to change. Change leads to even more change. What I kind of, my goal to even bring in awareness to this epidemic is the more people know, the more people are going to search, the more people are going to talk about it, the less people are going to be apt to do it if it's everywhere. It's one of those things that it just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, not to be corny and quote of a line from Catch the Fair One, but no one's looking because nobody cares. Unfortunately, that's so true for the Indigenous community. I mean, Indigenous women are 10 times more likely to experience violence in their life, you know, or I believe murder is the secondly cause of death in the Native and Indigenous women starting from the age of 3. I mean, why is that? With the leading in homelessness, drug addiction, depression, suicide, the list goes on. And it has a lot to do with, you know, people talk about Native people like we're dinosaurs. Like, oh, wow, you're Indian? I thought you guys were extinct. Like, dude, no. Like, it's crazy, you know. And then you get people, you live in a reservation? Like, no, I live in a house in the South Dilly. I grew up in the hood. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things that the everyday average person just has no idea, and it has to do with what they're being taught in school, what they're being taught to in society. So I just would ask people to, number one, know where you are, know the land, and know who originally occupied the land that you were on. Mm-hmm. And allies, non-Native allies, are our biggest asset right now, especially because you'll start having the conversation. This might lead to a discussion being brought up in the house. That's like, I think Washington right now, state of Washington, is putting up like an actual MLIW alert. I heard of this maybe months ago.
All right. Yeah, that's great. And yeah, because I don't think that there are any of us, like you were saying. I mean, I know in my family, we've been personally affected. And at even the very furthest Indigenous people that I know, they at least know of someone. This is something it's not going away, tragically, ever since colonization. It's been here. Mm-hmm. It's been happening. But on that note of indigeneity, you and I being mixed, we had a few discussions on sometimes that feeling of being less than. And you being Afro-Indigenous, what has the world looked like growing up? And now, you know, you're going to be one of the biggest names. I'm just saying that now. In the Indigenous acting world, by far, what has your connection to culture been when you feel sometimes like you're under the microscope when it comes to identity?
Oh, that's a loaded question. No, it's a really good question. you know, it's even like back to my childhood where I come from a family of, especially being from the Northeast Woodland tribes, of, you know, still trying to reconnect, regather ourselves from centuries of, you know, trying to take us out. We've come from first contact tribes. I mean, we held off them settlers for like 400 or 500 years before they went west. So it was a lot of work. You know what I mean? Shout out to all my ancestors who did all the work.
Yep.
But, you know, I grew up in a household where I am like pretty much just the first generation woman, at least from my line and my tribe, at least from my grandmother, great grandmother, my line, to grow up as just a mixed indigenous woman. That's how I got raised. And my mother was more into culture right before I was born. And then she just brought me up into it. As she learned, I was taught. And it was just like, oh, this is what we do. This is what I am. But then it's like, you don't look Native. And I'm like, I look like exactly like my cousins and all the other tribes, natives look around here. That's the one thing about the word indigenous that I would love to get through people's heads. Do not compare native or any kind of ethnic group to only look one certain way. That's another thing that, as far as identity, like my people come from the coast. We were next to salt water. Our hair is not going to be bone straight, black blown in the wind. It's going to be kinky curly, number one. Secondly, every indigenous area of group or area of people, family, tribe, nation, they're indigenous to their land, their people, their families. It doesn't mean that we're all going to look alike. That's one thing that was probably one of my pet peeves. And I'm like, what does it mean to look native? Like, can you please tell me what that means? And then to top it all off, to be mixed with Cape Verdean, which is, that's an argument. It's a whole other podcast, but it's basically African and Portuguese. Anyway, people don't know what I am. So just to try to find my footing, you know, I'm not native enough for natives because I look different because I'm mixed with black. So I got curly hair, I got freckles, my skin's a little dark, whatever it is. I'm different, which I'm very proud of. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not Cape Verdean enough for the Cape Verdeans. I don't speak it. I don't cook. I didn't grow up in a Cape Verdean household like that. I know where I'm from. I know where my family's from, but that's about it. So it was one of those not enough for anybody. And I was so busy trying to fit in a box where I wasted a lot of time, but I know now that I belong in my own little star-shaped box. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to fit in that stupid little circle. I want to be a star. No circle. So it wasn't easy. I mean, between that and then coming from a household where religion played a key part in my mom's life and me being two-spirit was just, it was all confusing. Hence the reason why I found boxing. But that outlet of really expressing myself through, you know, my art of boxing really helped me. And now there was a point in time where I was almost ashamed of being Cape Verdean because I associated being Cape Verdean with my father. And I had a real tough time with him. God rest his soul. Early in the years, teenage years, it was just, you know, my parents got divorced when I was about 4 and it was just in and out. So I thought that was my fault. I thought I wasn't enough for natives, the Cape Verdeans. It was just really hard to find my footing. But finding an outlet helped. And then when I really understood my purpose in that ring, besides the whole fighting part, spiritual, energetically, and doing what, you know, God-given talent, the creative-given talent that I have in fighting and battle, it's my time to pray in there. You know, we can't tell anybody what their medicine is. If that's my medicine, that's my medicine. The energy don't lie.
Eloquently put. I love that. And for people that, and if there's anyone out there listening, which I doubt wouldn't know what two-spirit means, but just in case they don't, can you explain what that is?
Sure. I mean, there's, if you speak to indigenous people, I don't think there's a universal meaning other than special. You know, especially we hold both energies 100%. For me, it's 100% comfortable in my masculine energy, 100% comfortable in my feminine energy. I have a ton of energy. I have ton of female energy. I have a ton of male energy, and I just am comfortable in either or. That's what it means to me.
That's awesome. Well, whatever people may question, or when it comes to fame, because there's a lot of online issues. I know that I struggled a lot with suddenly my career taking a turn and being cast as a cartoon character and a real life version of a cartoon character who's native, and then being like, who's this guy? Yeah, how do you deal with online comments, hate? What is fame when people are judging you for various things, be it two-spirit, be it mixed? How do you get that off your back?
You know, it's one of those things where, especially social media, it's like a necessary evil. It has its pros and cons. You know, I get to link up with a lot of people I wouldn't have necessarily met up with or met or had links to because of it. But, you know, just for everybody out there, social media is a fake world. It's not a real world. Oh, when you start getting emotionally involved in comments, that's when it's time to just shut it down. We all do it. But I, you know, especially with getting into this new found career I have, you know, the more success you have, the more enemies, the more hate you have to try to disrupt it. And I had recently had an issue I had a whole Facebook page. You'll laugh at this. We can all laugh at this. dedicated to me being a quote unquote pretendian. And this woman, oh, no. So when I got cast in Wind River 2, it was me and Gail Birmingham that she was attacking, saying I was playing red face and I was taking jobs away from real natives because I'm not a real American Indian. And there's plenty of a quote unquote American Indian actors out there that need to get these parts. Like, she just went in. She went hard in the paint, Kobe Bryant, man. It was like, I was like, wow. So there, I'm discovering, and I already knew this, especially with boxing, that the more success you have, the more people are going to come to try to destroy it. And I'm learning, it's just don't engage with it.
Hey, well, that's a very good way of actually dealing with it. Because you're right. It is all fake. Instagram, all of that stuff. Online. I mean, but it, you know, initially I let a little bit of that get to me too, because I hadn't had to deal with that kind of thing now, but you've got a lifetime now of fighting. And right now you're a supernova, exploding at the moment. Yeah. Right. So, on that note too, of Instagram, you often send messages on there. It seems to be to your younger self. I mean, what are some of those that you would like to share with your younger self from this moment?
Going through this process of just learning so much about myself. And, you know, also playing a different person makes you see different things in characters. Now that I'm noticing, you can pull different things out of yourself to add a little sprinkle into your character to create this person to express and to work through things. It's like therapeutic as hell. And I would definitely, you know, tell my younger self, I always have messages for her, like, you know, it's not your fault is exactly what I needed to hear. And you are worth so much. You're worthy of being loved. You're worthy to love, and you're worthy at top, like most of all, of success, which I think that's something that hits a lot of us, is that we get scared of that success because you think it's not worth it, or we're not worth it. Especially being an Indigenous woman, like there's just that common somber energy that you feel as an Indigenous woman that I understand much better now. That it's just because we've kind of been groomed and kind of feel like we're worthless. And then what goes back to MIW, these women, these men, these children, these boys, these girls are just walking around feeling worthless. And I'm sure that whoever's preying on these women and men can see that, sense it. You know what I mean? So just know that you're worthy of love, and you're worth so much. And I hope, I've heard this quote, maybe not verbatim, but I hope that things that you couldn't even imagine, that you can't dream of, that you can't see, I hope you accomplish that, because I could never see where I'm at now. I had little goals, but I overshot this by miles. You know what I mean? Just always being in a mental state of learning, of wonder, of exploring. And there's, don't put a ceiling on your knowledge. Don't put a ceiling on what you're capable of. And welcome failure, because you're going to fall down about 19. As long as you get up by that 20, you're good. Just keep moving. Everything's in motion. It's like water, and things will happen.
Yeah. And also, I think it's important too, you know, just don't live your life in comparison. I mean, that's what I always struggled with when I was younger, is just looking at the success of other people. But everybody's different. Everyone's got their path, but just be tenacious.
One thing I really learned was from Jody, and just from being on there, and because I'm such a perfectionist, is don't take everything so seriously. Have fun with it. You know, we were telling a dark story, and forget about the last take, man. Just forget about the last take and just be in the moment. Mm-hmm. Deal with what is right in front of you, because don't worry about what you did. It's over. Don't matter. Don't look at what you think's going to happen, because it could change, and don't have expectations. Just go and work off of what's going on right in front of you.
Oh, that is, I completely agree. And it was an absolute honor to be able to be opposite you in scenes. I mean, I just was absolutely amazed with what we were accomplishing there. But I wanted to switch gears now because I want to give you a chance to give a shout out, because I'm rolling out the red carpet. And I want to know, what are you watching? What Indigenous shows are out there that you recommend to other people to go check out at this moment?
This moment, Reservation Dogs is killing them. Yeah. It's killing them. Rutherford's Falls is pretty cool, man. I mean, we got Spirit Hunters. I haven't watched that yet, but, you know, shout out to everybody doing that. You know, we have a bunch of comedians that are hilarious right now, but those two shows for sure.
Awesome.
There's just so much talent right now. But there's been talent. We're just coming out right now, you know what I mean, into the public eye. But I'm so happy to see our humor. I could appreciate Reservation Dogs so much because it's not a Western with 1800s and then, you know, the Southwest Plains natives are getting slaughtered. You know what I mean? It's not, yeah. It is us. It is us today. And we're freaking hilarious. You know what I mean? So laughter is so important. It's such good medicine. And it's, dude, just check it out. It's hilarious, man.
That boy. I want to know, are there any allies out there? Is there an ally out there specifically you want to point that and say, hey, they're a real one?
I mean, Jody was an ally, man. That's the homie, yo. That's the homie. And I mean, Princess Johnson, she was in Tognuk. I just forgot her last name. The two Alaskan producers that we had on True Detective, shout out to both of them, man, for holding it down and making sure that we told that story the correct way. Because, you know, we're representing a group of people, not only Indigenous, but Alaskan Natives. That's a whole nother layer of non-representation that's out there. So big shout out. And to Butney, thank you for every NUPAC and in the entire, even our Greenlandic Natives that came over and, you know, just being able to represent them. You know, I was an artist to be able to represent them. You don't have to be Indigenous to support Indigenous issues as far as getting the word out and getting us to tell our stories. That's really important, to tell our stories from our narratives. And we're the only ones that can tell our stories correctly.
Before we wrap this up, is there anything else that you wanted to add before we take off from here?
No, man, I'm really humbled and honored to be getting these opportunities to not only, you know, be telling Indigenous stories, but also to be an Indigenous, mixed Indigenous, Afro-Indigenous, Black Native, Black Indian, Blindian, however you want to identify it. And Cape Verdean, being on the screen and having a face that looks like mine, hair that looks like mine, background that is mine, be on the big screen for our future generations, because I didn't grow up seeing me, you know, on the screen or in a boxing ring at all. Like, who's that? You know what I mean? So that's just something that I am. It's never me. It's always we. If I'm successful, then we're all successful.
You can listen to the rest of that episode, as well as other episodes of Actors and Ancestors, on most platforms that podcasts are available. Many thanks to JD and the production team behind the show for their time and work on this project. To end this episode, I'd like to highlight another badass mixed Indigenous artist. Danielle Hurley is Cree Métis on her father's side. His ancestors are from Amiskwasi Watskwakigan. Her mother's side is Irish, English, and Scottish. Danielle is the lead singer of the Vancouver band Princess Apparently. I personally know her from Loki Flex, the gym. Shout out to Feel Good Fitness, which also hosts semi-regular karaoke nights. You should definitely look this place up, but that's how I heard Danielle sing the grungiest, sexiest, most powerful rendition of the Isley Brothers' Shout. So, it wasn't a huge surprise when I heard her band's unreal sound. Danielle sent me a bio, and I think it's pretty perfect, so here it goes. Featuring members of notable Vancouver bands like Shearing Pinks, Red Circle, and Screaming Queens, and tooting the label of psychedelic grunge, Princess Apparently are a cathartic collective of co-creators, unified in unlocking hidden healing frequencies meant to inflame the core elements of the soul. Captured raw and dirty, live off the floor, their songs are birthed from late-night, no-holds-barred, musical and lyrical improvisations. Simultaneously enchanting and dangerous, with a sound reminiscent of a ferociously sexed-up sonic youth, Princess apparently tapped into something primal and uncontrived. And here's a bit of their song, Candy King.
My friends, they wait up on the corner. My life is starting to feel in order. My window locks, I'm loud as fuck. My mom would hear my dreams smashed. My pussy calls him, it really wants him. My mother, if only she knew. My tits are hard, the sweat is dripping, the thoughts of me and you.
Sadcast is brought to you by Sad Magazine, featuring stories, art, and design by local and emerging artists. The intro and interstitial music is by Commortal.